The Pat Kenny Show
with Aviva Insurance.
Weekdays at 9 a.m. on News Talk.
Aforementioned, Mr. Arthur Cummings, consultant, ophthalmologic surgeon and medical director at the Wellington Eye Clinic. Good afternoon to you, sir. How are you?
Hi, great. Thanks, Jonathan. Good to see you again.
The laser eye surgery that people have always heard about, it's kind of evolving, is it?
It is. There's an amazing shift. We had a very big shift that we call the paradigm shift, sort of the late 90s, in the way that the ablation was delivered to the cornea that really started improving the outcomes. But we've now had an incredible change that's occurred very recently. And what it entails, you'll know the term digital twin, but maybe not all your readers do, or your listeners do rather, sorry. And that would be where instead of just using a medication on a patient, you create a digital twin. So it's in silico. It's a computer model of this patient with all their peculiarities, and then the treatment's applied to the patient. So now what this treatment is doing is, in fact, creating a digital twin eye, so an avatar of your eye. And then what it does is it personalizes everything. So it's your cornea, your lens, the length of your eye, the way your eye works. And then the treatment's done in silico. So on the computer, the treatment's done on the model eye. And the result is refined by multiple iterations of the ablation until the treatment on the digital eye is perfect. And then once that's perfect, it's now applied to your eye.
So in other words, what you're doing is you're perfecting it on the digital twin. And then when it's 100% bang on, then it's your eye's turn.
That's exactly right. So what happens with medicine today is you've got a headache, we give you a painkiller, we expect it'll improve. We give something and we see how it goes. That's how medicine is today. You do something and see where it goes. This is the first time around we've got the ability to test drive it on your eye, a model of your eye. And not only just the mechanical or the virtual model, but in fact included in there is the healing. The healing the epithelium is going to have, the biomechanical effect, everything unique to you is put into this digital model. Now, we've seen the results. The results are spectacular.
Yeah.
So we've seen the effect of it.
And the time as well. I mean, at the moment, presumably, it takes a long time for a surgeon to make sure that they're doing the right thing and the patient is comfortable. A lot of this is being expedited now because of this new technology.
That's exactly right. So we were involved in this study in 2009. I published in 2010 and 2011 on this very thing. It then took three different devices to get the information and 6 hours of computation. Now it's one device, captures information in 8 minutes per eye. The computer iteration is less than a minute and it's calculated the best treatment for your eye and then you apply it to the eye.
Are you putting yourself out of a job here, Arthur? Are we worried about the future of ophthalmologists?
The future of ophthalmology and many other industries is going to become more and more robotic. But if you look at Da Vinci and the robots used today in other surgeries, you still need someone to operate the robot.
Yeah, you're safe enough.
For the moment.
We have loads of questions that have come in, Arthur, and keep them coming in. 087 1400 106 if you have a question. The first one is, my eye issues, I believe, are age-related, I beg your pardon. Unfortunately, I wore my reading glasses too often at the beginning. I wear glasses for driving and reading varifocals. It was recommended to wear the glasses all the time, and my eyes have definitely deteriorated. Do you think I could be a candidate for surgery to correct this? So there's a bit going on there, isn't there?
Yeah, there are a lot of questions. So the first thing is, there's no question that if you want a surgical solution, there will be one. It may be laser, it may be a lens replacement. But here's a message I want to give to everyone listening out there about this thing, because many people say this. And almost as all our videos, our educational videos in the clinic start, they start with as we age. So a lot of things happen as we age. And the thing about what this listener is talking about is something called presbyopia. And the one thing about ophthalmology that's quite predictable is the age of presbyopia. And in Ireland, presbyopia sets in between 42 and 45. That's when it sets in. And it continues to get worse until you're 70. So it's very much prescribed. So if you get your first set of glasses at 42 and they're a plus one, or you get your first set of glasses at 47 and they're a plus one and a half, or your first one at 50 and they're a plus two, it doesn't make a difference. You're on a trajectory anyway. And the glasses make no difference. All the glasses do early on is to give you better vision with less effort. So that makes sense. But they haven't increased your presbyopia. That was on a trajectory that...
So in other words, that this lady or man, I'm not sure if it's a lady or a man, they're beating themselves up unnecessarily, because it's not the fact that they wore the glasses more, it's the fact that their eyesight was going to deteriorate anyway.
That's bang on, Jonathan. That's exactly right.
Yeah, okay. So just give yourself a break. You're fine. For the eye doctor, who I presume is you, I can read perfectly well outside in sunlight, but I have to wear reader glasses while indoors in any kind of light at any time of the day. What's the reason for this? I'm 48, and other than those readers, I've never worn glasses or have I had eye problems.
Very perceptive. So, yeah, it's a really good question. So the first thing is, as we've just said, it's normal to get reading glasses between 42 and 45. This person's 48, so doing particularly well. Now, why can they still read outdoors like many people could do at 48? Is when you read, three things happen. Your eyes converge, which means they look towards each other as you look at something in front of you. The second thing that happens is your lens tries to accommodate. The lens inside the eye tries to change shape, which it loses that ability. That's what presbyopia is. But the third thing that happens, it's part of this reflex, which means you can't undo it. It happens every time, is your pupil becomes smaller. And as your pupil becomes smaller, you increase the depth of focus. Now, what's happening outside is your pupil's small thanks to the light.
The light, because it's bright.
So it gives you this depth of focus. Yeah. And what happens inside is your pupil's larger and you're losing the pupil's contribution to seeing up near.
So what's the solution?
Reading glasses indoors.
Just there's nothing wrong with it. Just wear the glasses indoors. 100%. And celebrate your 20/20 vision when you're in the sunshine.
Exactly. Yeah. And if you don't like the glasses indoors, there's solutions for this. But for now, you know, until the glasses really bother you, you don't look for surgical solutions.
Another question from a listener: how many years can I get injections for wet macular degeneration? How long can injections keep the disease away? I suppose the first natural question is, what is wet macular degeneration?
Right, so many people, again, as we age, get something called dry macular degeneration, where the macula simply degenerates. But then a percentage of those, maybe between 5 and 10%, becomes wet. And the wet part is where little blood vessels grow into the area and they start leaking. And a big, big, massive, what would the word be, advancement for this particular situation was when injections came on the scene. And these injections have been life-changing for people, and they've really sometimes improved their vision, but they've protected vision on the long term. And they vary from person to person. So for some, you can have an injection and need the second one in 2 months' time. Others, it might last 4 months' time. So it's very individual. What I've heard is that people would normally not really go past 18 injections maybe. And if you're getting them every 3 or 4 months, that might take you to a few years. But what I've also heard and I'm aware of is because of this very issue, these injections aren't fun for anyone.
I was going to say, they sound so...
They're not fun. Yeah, they're not fun. Oh, they're not that painful, but it's just the whole idea of having to go in every couple of months for an injection is hard. So people are working very hard now on pellets to implant. So you implant a pellet on an annual basis and the pellet might last a whole year. So now you get much more bang for your buck kind of thing.
Okay, so in other words, you don't have to have a needle. You could just have a pellet that's there and it does the job.
It's placed in the back of the eye and it has a slow release of the same drug. It's called anti-VEGF. It's a drug that is anti-blood vessel growth. So it slows down the growth of these vessels in the macula.
Okay. Often at night and under certain lighting conditions, coloured text in books and magazines moves on the page. Oh, this is a good one. I have a slight colour blindness, red and green. Is it a symptom of the colour blindness or is it another sight defect? I wonder, could that be astigmatism of some kind?
Yeah, there's a lot of things that can play an impact. Astigmatism is one, without a doubt, because astigmatism with the eye shaped like a rugby ball doesn't have to be irregular, which means when the pupil's small in the sunlight, it's got a particular shape. But when you have a bigger pupil in the dark, that shape changes. So you have more aberrations in the eye. What's very interesting that might help your listener is if you think about the recent northern lights that we saw, how many people said afterwards, I looked at the lights and they were all white. But when I looked at my phone, they were in color. And so what happens when you're in the dark for a while is your rods become more active. And the rods are those photoreceptors that work in the dark and they're more peripheral. When the lights are on or you're out in the sunlight, your cones are working. And the cones are in the macula. They have finer vision, more meticulous vision, and they have all the color. So if you're sitting in the dark for a long while, the brain starts using the rods, which is less focus and more about movement, and so you see the vision change. You've seen often if you're in a dark room and you come out into bright light, it takes a while to adjust.
For the eyes to adjust.
And that's what's going from the rods to the cones, and vice versa. You go into a dark room suddenly, and you just can't see for a while, and then you start seeing within 30 seconds or so. I'm starting to see a whole lot better now. And that's when the rods come into play.
So it's not necessarily the colour blindness here. It's just how the brain is interpreting the signal, is it?
Yes, and now it's getting used to the cones working and dominating versus the rods and how that switches in light.
It gives rise to the question, because I have astigmatism. I often refer to it as a stigmata, and people point out that I'm not quite Christ on the cross. But astigmatism in one eye, which means traffic signals. If I don't have my glasses on when driving, the traffic signal isn't sharp. It's kind of all blurred and moving.
Exactly.
You can see that. I always find that fascinating, that everyone doesn't see traffic lights like me.
Yeah, so what astigmatism does is if you think about the rugby ball, think first about a tennis ball or a golf ball. If that was the front of your eye and you were looking at a letter E or a plus sign, what's happening for the vertical and the horizontal all of those images are landing in the same spot on the retina, on the macula. So you've got a cross on the macula or an E on the macula. But if you have a rugby ball-shaped cornea, now the one part of the E is focused in one place, the vertical part for argument's sake, but the horizontal part that's striking a different curvature of the cornea is focused elsewhere. So now inside the eye, the two are separated.
And it doesn't look like an E.
Yeah, and now the brain's got to try and piece them together. So it gives you some version of an E, but not quite what you should be seeing.
Yeah. I've been getting, this is from another listener, I've been getting migraine aura without headache for years, very intermittently, perhaps 3 or 4 years. Recently, they've increased in frequency, about 4 or 5 last month, coincided with me coming off aspirin every second day. Is it connected? I had an MRI, it was clear, 3 months ago. So first of all, what is migraine aura?
Right, so migraine aura is what happens before you get the headache. So a typical history of migraine is in your 20s and 30s, you get even earlier. You get headaches, but they're preceded by aura. And the aura could be something you smell, something you see. Most often, the migraine we see would be things that people see, and they see zigzags in the field of vision. And what's happening there is that's the phase where in the brain, the blood vessels are constricting. So there's less blood supply to the visual cortex, and you see these aberrations. And then after that's happened, and you've been in spasm for a while, now the blood vessels dilate, and they become flaccid, and they take a while to get their tone back. So now for a while, they're contracting and releasing. That's the throbbing headache. And then as we get older, the vessels of the arteries become harder. So they can't move quite as much anymore. So the headache component disappears. Now you get two different kinds of migraines, additional migraines. And the one is called ocular migraine and the one's called retinal migraine. And that's when the changes in the vessels are happening only in the retina or only in the eye. And so then you get these visual symptoms, the aura, without headache.
Okay, so that's what, and that explains it quite well. Question for your eye expert. My mother has had 2 cataract surgeries, one in December, the second in February, one in each eye. She has had significant discomfort and quite severe pain since the first surgery. She's having visible swelling on her face, which is causing an issue under the left eye. What could be the possible causes?
There are a couple of things. If there's swelling of the face, then you need to see a dermatologist or an allergist and just try and find out if it's an additional, cofactor. If there's pain only in an otherwise perfect procedure, there's a very uncommon condition called neuropathic pain. And all that means is potentially where the incision was made, a nerve was cut, which happens every time you make an incision, but the nerves normally heal very well, but sometimes they form a little neuroma. So there's a small little bubble at the end of the nerve that keeps on sending a signal. It's not it's not coming from a real stimulus, but it's real pain that you can feel. And again, there's treatment around that. So there are quite a few anaesthetists especially who become specialists in pain management. And there's some of them that do specifically facial pain. It'll make a lot of sense if it's mostly around pain.
Okay.
And an ophthalmologist has said there's no cause that I can see to go and see a facial pain specialist.
Okay. There's options for your mum. Interestingly, a couple of questions have come in that are somewhat linked. Jonathan, how much has laser treatment improved over the years? I was told a decade ago my sight wasn't suitable for the treatment back then. And there's another one up here. Could you ask Arthur if a person over 55 could be suitable for eye laser surgery? My reading glasses 3.5, long distance is 1.5. So, the people who were told before laser's not for you, is it possible that it might be for them now?
It's possible, but laser's been really good for the last 20 years. This paradigm shift I spoke about earlier is just refining it to another level. But why it's changed and why someone might say you're not suitable for laser is because there might be better options. And if you're 3.5 and you're 55 years of age, laser might give you, with your particular set of circumstances, it might give you 5 or 10 years before you need some other kind of help. Where a lens replacement now resolves the issue better and permanently, and you don't get cataracts down the line. So you'll be guided. Someone will guide you along the route of telling you what the best thing is for you. But laser, if it's an interim solution, doesn't make a lot of sense. You want at least 20 years from laser to make sense.
This gives rise to another question here. I had my eyes lasered in 2008. I had the monovision procedure. For the last few years, I've worn glasses again for reading. My distance vision has deteriorated as well. Is there a lifespan and can I get it done a second time?
You can get it done a second time, but you need to identify why it's changed. We know it's the lens, that we know. So the one part of your eye that keeps on changing on a lifetime basis is your lens. The lens inside the eye has the same origins as skin, nails, and hair, which means uniquely they never stop growing. And as the lens grows, if you're exactly at zero, you've always been at zero your whole life, you've never needed glasses, you'll never need glasses for distance. But from your 40s, you'll need glasses for reading that get stronger every year, as we said earlier. But if you have the lens changing now, that could be the reason. So you've got to make sure the lens is healthy before you do laser.
I had what was called binocular vision, which meant I could see very long distances and very fine print, full range of vision. In my 50s, I thought my vision had deteriorated. When I had an eye test, they told me I had 20/20. I am 69 and now need reading glasses. Is there anything I can do other than reading glasses? From AE and Monaghan. Well, you can thank your genes if you've gotten this far with 20/20 vision and celebrate that. But like everything else, is there any
Absolutely
other option?
Right. Two approaches. One is blended vision. Treat one eye only to make it better for near, and the brain does the rest for you. One eye is near, one eye is far. Or do a lens implant with a lens implant that's multifocal, that's trifocal, where the lens implant gives you the whole range of vision again. But someone who's 20/20 at 69, that you're doing amazingly well, I'd try and find a solution where you can find a solution with one eye only rather than treating both. You're seeing too well to treat both, in my view.
I'm 62 years of age with perfect eyesight. There's a lot of them out there, isn't there? No loss for long distance or reading. Is there something I can do to keep my eyesight well for as long as possible? Eat carrots, number one. That's debunked, but what can they do?
One thing we've seen, and I've read a little bit about this, is vitamin C. Taking vitamin C seems to give you, it's an antioxidant, seems to keep the lens functional for longer.
I'm 61. For months now, my eyes are weeping a lot, accompanied by a very runny nose. I also wear varifocals. I feel like my eyes are blurry. What should I do?
Right. It sounds like there's a dry issue over there. So the first thing is to figure out. So it sounds weird. You're tearing a lot, but the biggest cause of that is actually
dry.
So yeah, that you have reflex tearing. That sounds like something. The second thing might be some sort of underlying allergy. So certainly check those things out. So here's the interesting. If you drop your keys in a swimming pool and you see them lying on the floor, you know they're not exactly there. They're actually somewhere else, because light bends on the surface of where the air meets the water. That's the same for our eyes. The place where light bends to focus in the back of your eyes, where light from the air strikes the water surface of your cornea.
I'm going to give you Daniel's question because it's a cracker to finish up on.
Right.
Your eye is a muscle at the end of the day. Do we have to, or should we work our eye muscles like our other muscles around the body? We go to the gym for our biceps and six packs. Should we work on our eyes in a similar fashion?
It's a very interesting question, an interesting thought that people have. But the eye is so much more than a muscle. It is the most complex organ in the body. It is everything put together. And the only muscular part is the focus part. And the focus part keeps on working whether you basically use it or not. It keeps on working. It's a fascinating organ. It's a very strange comment I'm going to make, but it's an anatomical fact. But the sphincter of our bowels...
I didn't see it going this direction, but carry on.
Oh, it works your entire life. Works your entire life. It's the same kind of muscle inside the eye. It works your entire life. It just keeps on working. It's not one of those muscles that fatigue. The reason we start losing reading is because the lens becomes more rigid. It keeps on growing. And, and the sphincter's not strong enough anymore to make the lens move.
I'm going to finish up with this one. I said that was the last one, but there's one more. 12 years ago, Arthur took on my complex sight issues. He totally reassured me he could help and improve my situation. And I'm delighted to say my sight is as good today as it was post-treatment and procedure from a grateful ex-client.
Well, that's fantastic. I'm delighted to hear that.
So keep doing what you're doing, Arthur.
Thank you very much, John.
Arthur Cummins, genuinely, of all the years I've been covering this slot, yours is the one that gets the most questions that come in, because many have them out there and you have a great way of dealing with patients. Arthur Cummins, thank you very much for joining us. It's funny, some items resonate more than others and you tend not to see them coming. And we've had so many texts come into the programme about our discussion on parental alienation that we did with Stephanie Regan earlier on. One listener says, it means a lot that there are psychologists like Stephanie who understand the concept. Huge gratitude sent to you. And if you want to listen back to that conversation with Stephanie, you can do so on the podcast, which is uploaded to the Newstalk app powered by Go Loud, or the website newstalk.com. Just search for the Pat.
The Pat Kenny Show
with Aviva Insurance.
Weekdays at 9 a.m. on Newstalk.